Coming up on KSDP News, Bogos the Lof volcano erupts, and today's the shortest day of the year. Stay tuned. Good afternoon. You're listening to KSDP 830 AM Sandpoint. I'm Marissa Williams with some local news on Wednesday, December 21st, 2016. A volcano in the Eastern Aleutians erupted suddenly Tuesday afternoon, prompting the Alaska Volcano Observatory, or AVO, to issue its highest alert level for aviation. The alert has since been downgraded. Bogoslav volcano is on an uninhabited island 60 miles northwest of Unalaska. AVO scientist Michelle Coombs says several pilots reported seeing an ash cloud about 34,000 feet, nearly the height of a commercial jet, above Bogoslav. She says satellite data show a short-lived explosion occurred around 4 p.m., but the activity has since died down. Coombs says the volcano seems to have erupted because it was gassy.
Both Aleutians East Borough and Aleutians West Census Area do have a lot of economic activity, especially when compared to a lot of the rest of Western Alaska. So it is reasonable that they would have lower unemployment rates than some of your neighbors up the peninsula.
It looked like it had a lot of gas in it, a lot of sulfur gas and probably water gas. And so that might have been kind of the opening event in possibly the eruptive sequence.
An eruptive sequence that might include new land forming.
People have seen the shape of the island has changed, that new little side islands have grown up, and then they're sometimes destroyed either by explosions or just by wave action and erosion.
The area is very dynamic. Coombs says over the years, the shape, height, and number of islands have changed. Since the 1700s, Bogoslav has erupted 8 times, and Coombs says it's hard to know how long this eruption will last. Eruptions are like personalities.
Some volcanoes tend to, have a big explosive eruption and then go back to sleep. A lot of volcanoes have kind of more longer-lasting, low-level activity.
She says long eruptions, lasting weeks or months, is common in Alaska. Because there is no ground-based monitoring equipment on Bogoslav volcano, the AVO cannot predict future eruption activity. Instead, they are monitoring from afar, using satellite images and other data for indications of significant seismic activity. If this eruption continues, it could impact aviators, mariners, and drop ash on nearby communities. Prior to this, the last recorded eruption of Bogoslav was in 1992 and lasted nearly a month. The numbers are out. Alaska's unemployment rate in November is essentially unchanged from October. The Department of Labor reports the seasonally adjusted unemployment rate for the month at 6.8%. To count as unemployed, you need to be available and actively looking for work within the last month. Caroline Schultz, an economist with the state, says over the past 2 years, Alaska's unemployment rate has been rising.
Both Aleutians East Borough and Aleutians West Census Area do have a lot of economic activity, especially when compared to a lot of the rest of Western Alaska. So it is reasonable that they would have lower unemployment rates than some of your neighbors up the peninsula. We definitely are ending the year with a higher seasonally adjusted rate than we started, which corresponds to other economic indicators that suggest that Alaska's economy is doing worse.
Economic indicators like the state's budget deficit and the number of available jobs.
We are seeing job losses accelerating through 2016, and that's definitely contributing to the rising unemployment rate.
Schultz estimates there are 84,000 fewer jobs than this time last year, with the oil and gas industry losing the most positions. But there are some communities keeping their unemployment rates low. The Aleutians East Borough and the city and borough of Sitka had the lowest unemployment rate statewide at 4.3%, and all urban areas' rates fell below the statewide average. It's been more than a year since President Barack Obama visited Alaska and became the first sitting president to travel above the Arctic Circle. The trip was designed to draw attention to climate change in the lead up to last year's international conference in Paris, and the president went out of his way to highlight Alaska villages threatened by rapid erosion. But as Obama prepares to leave office, most of those villages find themselves no closer to a solution. Rachel Waldos of Alaska's Energy Desk reports.
On September 2nd, 2015, President Obama stepped up to the microphone in the Kotzebue School gym.
Hello, Alaska! Hello, Kotzebue!
Obama said he had come north for one big reason: to raise the alarm about the danger of climate change from some of the places where it's most obvious. Places like the eroding village of Kivalina, which he flew over on his way to Kotzebue. For many Alaskans, he said, it's no longer a question of if they will have to relocate, but when. If a foreign power threatened to wipe an American community off the map, he said, the federal government would do everything in its power to stop it. Climate change should be no different.
And what's happening here is America's wake-up call. It should be the world's wake-up call.
I appreciated that he said that, but I haven't personally, I haven't really seen anything come out of it.
Maya Lukin was mayor of Kotzebue during the president's visit. She also worked on climate change issues for the Manilek Association, the regional nonprofit. Lukin was pretty excited about Obama's visit.
You know, personally, I was like, I'm going to meet the president.
And professionally, she hoped his visit would draw attention to the issues facing rural Alaska, which it did. And she appreciates that. But she says attention isn't enough.
When the president says something like the United States would do anything in its power to make sure that these places aren't wiped off the face of the earth, you got to put your money where your mouth is.
And on that front, the response hasn't matched the rhetoric. 5 months after the president's visit, the Obama administration released its major funding proposal as part of its final budget request to Congress. $400 million over 10 years for issues including village relocation in rural Alaska. But Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski called that basically a bait and switch. The program would have been paid for by taking revenue away from other oil-producing states, and it had little chance of passing Congress. Murkowski accused the Obama administration of using Alaska as just a backdrop for his climate change agenda. During his visit to Kotzebue, Obama also announced that the Denali Commission, which has historically built infrastructure in rural Alaska, would be the lead federal agency coordinating relocation efforts.
There would be one federal agency that could marshal all the federal agencies together and then be responsive to the state and the individual communities.
Joel Niemeyer is co-chair of the Denali Commission. He says that's a pretty big deal, but the new assignment came with no new funding. The Obama administration requested an additional $4 million a year for the commission, but Congress has yet to appropriate it. Niemeyer says the Denali Commission is doing what it can within its small existing budget. But it's frustrating.
All of Alaska now knows the commission has this assignment. My concern is that if in future appropriations there are no funds for this effort, that's the material to rural Alaska. They're still going to come to us and say, this is your assignment. See it through.
And Niemeyer says for a while this year, he even had trouble getting a call back from the White House to clarify his agency's new assignment. Obama, of course, has many fans in rural Alaska, and they point out there's only so much the president can do. It's Congress that controls the federal purse strings. And Sally Russell Cox, a planner with the state who's worked on relocation for about a decade, says the issues are clearly getting more attention.
The federal agencies are now engaged at a very high level, so there's a lot of high-level attention to how funding and other resources can be pooled to help these communities.
Agencies, including the Departments of Agriculture, Energy, and Interior, have made money available for things like water infrastructure, energy efficiency, and planning, but nothing close to the amounts needed to move a whole village. Cox says the state will continue to do what it can, but she says the federal government has a special responsibility, because in many cases, villages are where they are because the federal government put them there, often by choosing the location for a school. With Obama on his way out the door, that federal responsibility now falls to Congress and the incoming Trump administration. Maya Lukin in Kotzebue says she hopes the next president will pay attention because rural Alaska is running out of time.
We don't call them climate change adaptation plans. We call them a survival plan. So how are we going to survive? How are we going to ensure that our culture stays alive in, you know, our changing weather?
For now, that's a question without a good answer. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Rachel Waldholtz in Anchorage.
The Obama administration did have one big pot of money it could have used to help villages dealing with climate change, but none of that money came to Alaska. Tomorrow, we'll hear why. Alaska marked the solstice early this morning at 1:44 a.m., so what does that mean for the amount of daylight across the state? To answer that question, we checked in with Brian Brettschneider, a climatologist in Anchorage, who closely tracks Alaska climate data and trends. He regularly talks with editor Annie Fiat from Alaska's Energy Desk as part of the segment, Ask a Climatologist. He says the amount of daylight depends a lot on where you are in the state.
If you're basically north of the Arctic Circle, so say north of Kotzebue, of course there's no daylight, so no official sunrise or sunset. And then once you get south of there, say in Fairbanks, you're about 3.5 hours. When you get to Anchorage, it's somewhere in the 5.5 hour range. And then when you get down to Juneau, about 6 hours and 20 minutes.
So it makes a big difference.
It does. And then it really picks up quite a bit more as you head down south of Alaska into the lower 48.
Yeah. So compare that to a few major cities in the lower 48.
Yeah, so places, say, in the northern part of the lower 48, like Seattle or Chicago, you're looking at 8.5 to 9 hours of daylight. And then as you get farther south, like, say, Los Angeles, 10 hours, Miami, about 10.5 hours.
How does the amount of daylight, especially in a place like Fairbanks or Barrow, how does it affect the climate?
Well, when the sun is within, say, about 5 degrees above the horizon, it provides essentially no solar energy. And so the day-to-day climate, even though the sun is out and maybe if it's shining on your skin, you might feel a little bit of warmth, it provides almost no atmospheric heating. So it's just as likely in Fairbanks, for example, that the high temperature of the day would occur at 2 a.m. and the low temperature at 2 p.m. There's really no correlation like you'd find in the summer when the sun is high in the sky and the afternoon high temperature is going to be just after that peak solar angle. It could be any time of the day or night once you get a little bit north of Anchorage.
Does the amount of daylight balance out around the globe over the course of a year?
Well, that's a really interesting question because we kind of we assume that, yeah, it's long days in the summer, short days in the winter, and they all average out. And it's actually not entirely true because of the elliptical nature of our orbit and the tilt of our axis. We actually get more daylight in the summer here in Alaska, then we have darkness in the winter. So, for example, up at, if I get the pronunciation right, Utqiagvik, formerly Barrow, in the